I'm your host, Frankie, and with me, as always,
Jeremy David King.
So strap in, smash that pedal, and ride with us down the paranormal highway.
Let's debunk and find the truth behind every ghost story in the world of transportation.
Welcome to Haunted Garage.
Let's rev it.
Welcome back to the Haunted Garage. I hope you enjoyed our William Lemp episode. You guys are like Lemp historians almost right now.
Almost. We're getting there.
We have a lot more to cover, but Jeremy, this is Haunted Garage.
So we're going to talk about a car?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That seems appropriate.
That tracks.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, if you're not following us on the IG, and when I say that, I mean the Instagrams, okay? It's The Haunted Garage. Go ahead, stop what you're doing right now, okay? If you're driving, just take your eyes off the road and become a ghost, and we can investigate that car.
Totally text while you're driving.
We found him in a tree, sir, because this is in the UK, clearly.
Right.
He was texting, and he was looking for The Haunted Garage on Instagram.
It's going to end up like that car that hits the tire and flies up, lands on the other one, and then slides across and hits the truck.
Yes, yes. That video is on our website right now. It's on Instagram right
is
now.
Is it really?
No. Can be.
You know what? I'll find it, and we can put it up there.
Hey, like and prescribe on the YouTubes at the Haunted Garage under Shift Films. Follow us on the Instagrams at the Haunted Garage. Hey, we're looking for a third guest on our third segment.
We like to talk to people.
Let's talk ghosts. What do you guys got out there? What do you guys want to promote? What do you want to do with your life? Anyway, or your afterlife. Because me and Jeremy are living our best afterlife.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
That's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So if you haven't checked out the website in Corner of the Macabre, there's some fun articles, fun pictures. You can actually see Jeremy and myself ghost hunting. You can see all the years of knowledge that we have, everything that we've collected over the years. This is the Real Deal podcast, guys. We are the real deal. This is the real paranormal investigators. And what we specialize in is haunted transportation.
Yes, we do.
And everybody's like, why don't you ever do an episode? We did do one episode.
We did one episode.
We covered three different cars.
We did, though. Yes, that is true.
This is going to be the fourth car, and it's the whole episode, guys.
Yes.
And it's Jeremy's favorite make and model.
No, it's not.
It's a Ford.
Oh, he said a four-letter F word. I think, you know, like, we're going to get in trouble over that.
You should call the FCC.
I'm going to.
Okay. But this Ford Deluxe is actually reminiscent because 20 years later, it would be the same car that would kill.
One-speed Dean.
James Dean.
Yep.
So this is going back to a 1934. So we're talking Bonnie and Clyde.
Yay.
Okay. So yeah, I was waiting for like, but there's nobody else here. Oh. Well, maybe there is. Maybe it's an EVP.
Oh. I'm here. Hey, guys.
Weirdest ghost voice ever, right? It's almost in every episode.
That's because he's a fan.
I'm dying over here.
Okay, that's better. That's what Bonnie and Clyde were saying when the first bullet entered the vehicle.
I'm dying over here.
Like that.
You know, it seems like there only needed to be two after the first one.
But what do great paranormal researchers do, Jeremy? What's the first thing we do?
We jump to conclusions. I have a jump to conclusions mat over here on the floor.
No.
What do we do, Jeremy?
Lots of research.
Yes, you hit it on the head. Lots of research. So I think before we jump into Bonnie and Clyde, maybe we should tell them the history of how it all began.
How it began.
So shall we roll out the beautiful sound design stage?
Yeah, we got actors. We're bringing them in.
We're going to bring these actors in. Hey, Shawnee. Like that.
Is it?
Is that's that the whole episode is in the Broad Atlantic episode.
Warren Beanie's over here.
Warren Beanie?
Beanie.
Warren Beanie.
And, is that Dick Tracy or is that Bonnie and Clyde?
And I don't know. And Faye Dunlow?
Dunlap?
And Faye Dunlap?
Dunlap? I'm a Dunlap. My belly Dunlap my belt.
Hey, guys, if you're still with us and you haven't turned this off, please enjoy this nice, as we take a journey back down to memory lane with two gangsters that took the world by storm. It was romanticized. I mean, it was the Robin Hood of our day.
I mean, well, a little earlier than us, but yes.
Yes, and they stole from the rich.
And gave to the poor.
And here we go. Cue music, won't you?
No shot, no gimmick, no gimmick.
Totally wrong gangster on that one, so let me cue the right music now. In 1967, a film starring Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty premiered. It was nominated for 10 Academy Awards. The film romanticized the violence that was spread from 1932 to 1934. Two Academy Awards were given out, with Estelle Parsons winning Best Supporting Actress and Burnett Guffey winning Best Cinematographer. Bonnie and Clyde were notorious for committing murders and killing more than 13 people, including 9 law enforcement officers and 4 civilians. Even in the 60s, Hollywood tends to glorify violence against police officers, which is not acceptable. The film portrays the story of Clyde and his rise and fall as an anti-authoritarian criminal gangster. Both tragic figures, Bonnie and Clyde, try to function as a family while on the run. The movie showcases a variety of contrasting moods and tone shifts, ranging from serious to humorous. It can be considered as a mix of different genres, including gangster film, tragic romance, road trip, buddy comedy, and screwball comedy. The film is an excellent example of experimental filmmaking from the French New Wave or Nouvelle Vague. The movie's poster glorified violence and portrayed the couple as young and in love despite their murderous ways. Now, as bona fide paranormal researchers, you know where the hunt begins, and that is in the actual story. Bonnie Parker, 19, and Clyde Barrow, 21, met in Dallas, Texas in 1930. Parker was actually married to an imprisoned murderer named Roy Thornton, who would later die in 1937. But regardless of all that, she got with Clyde, and they formed Bonnie and Clyde. In November 1932, William Daniel Jones replaced Raymond Hamilton as Bonnie and Clyde's partner after Hamilton left them several months earlier. Ivan M. Buck Barrow, the brother of Clyde, was granted a full pardon by the governor on March 23, 1933, and was released from the Texas State Prison. He immediately joined Clyde, accompanied by his wife, Blanche, making their group of fugitives number 5 individuals. This group carried out a series of daring robberies that made national headlines. Although they evaded arrest during several confrontations with law enforcement, their criminal exploits intensified police efforts to catch them. On July 29, 1933, there was a shootout between the police and Buck Barrow in Iowa, which resulted in his death. Blanche was captured during this event, and Jones, often mistaken for Pretty Boy Floyd, was arrested in Houston, Texas by the sheriff's office in November 1933. However, Bonnie and Clyde continued their criminal activities together. On November 22, 1933, the sheriff and his deputies of Dallas, Texas, tried to capture Bonnie and Clyde near Grand Prairie by setting a trap, but the couple managed to escape the gunfire. They then held up an attorney on the highway and took his car, which they abandoned in Miami, Oklahoma on December 21, 1933. Bonnie and Clyde robbed a citizen in Shreveport, Louisiana. On January 16, 1934, Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker liberated 5 prisoners, including Raymond Hamilton, who was serving sentences totaling over 200 years, from the Eastham State Prison Farm in Waldo, Texas. During the escape, however, 2 guards were shot by the prisoners using automatic pistols. Barrow had hidden the pistols in a ditch before the escape. As the prisoners were running away, Barrow provided cover fire with bursts of machine gun fire. One of the escapees was Henry Methvin from Louisiana. On April 1, 1934, Bonnie and Clyde encountered 2 young highway patrolmen near Grapevine, Texas. The officers were shot before they could draw their guns. Then on April 6, 1934, Bonnie and Clyde shot a constable in Miami, Oklahoma, who later died from his injuries. Additionally, they abducted a police chief and wounded him as well. The FBI had jurisdiction only over the charge of transporting a stolen vehicle, but the agents worked tirelessly on the case. They pursued every lead and distributed wanted notices to the other officers, providing fingerprints, photographs, descriptions, criminal records, and other relevant data. The FBI agents pursued the trail across multiple states, finally tracking down Barrow Gang in Louisiana. During their investigation, they uncovered a connection between Bonnie and Clyde and the Methvin family of Louisiana. Additionally, the agents discovered that the infamous duo had been driving a stolen car from New Orleans. On April 13, 1934, an FBI agent investigated the Ruston area of Louisiana. During this investigation, the agent obtained information that conclusively placed Bonnie and Clyde in a remote area southwest of Ruston. The Methvins' residence was situated nearby, and the agent learned that Bonnie and Clyde had visited their home on multiple occasions. Special agents in Texas had learned that Clyde and his companion had been traveling from Texas to Louisiana, sometimes accompanied by Henry Methvin. The FBI and local law enforcement authorities in Louisiana and Texas concentrated on apprehending Bonnie and Clyde, whom they firmly believed to be in the area. It was learned that Bonnie and Clyde, with some of the Methvins, had staged a party at Black Lake, Louisiana, on May 21, 1934, and were due to return to the area 2 days later. In May 1934, while traveling on a backwoods road near their hideout at Bineville Parish, Louisiana, Bonnie and Clyde encountered a police roadblock near Gibsland, Louisiana. The officers, who were both from Texas and Louisiana, ambushed the couple's stolen car, firing over 100 bullets.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
And killing them both within minutes. Bonnie and Clyde died in the 1934 Ford Deluxe on May 23rd, 1934, outside of Bineville Parish, Louisiana. Well, Jeremy, I put that nice little, kind of dark country down there because a lot of people think that when you say gangster, it automatically assumes that these are Irish gangsters, Italian gangsters in the city, you know, like running alcohol and stuff.
Right.
But that wasn't the case with these guys.
No, they were all like in the rural areas.
Yeah. So that's why we put that nice country music kind of like outlaw, but 1930s outlaws, right? You don't got horses, you got horsepower. What is wrong? Jesus, this show.
We're special.
Is there a hammy in there?
You want to?
No, it wasn't, though. Like, this was the type of scene that they were using this car, this Ford Deluxe, which had miles per hour up to 65, right?
And this is in a time period where there's no highways. I mean, yep. They were all the way from, they had a shootout in Iowa. They were in Texas, Oklahoma. They were Louisiana.
Yeah. I mean, and they were busting people out of prison, too, with these cars because they were so fast. Didn't he even write a letter to Henry Ford?
He wrote a letter to Henry Ford about his car, how it skinned, I think is one of the words he used in it. It was so skinned.
You know what? I'm going to read the letter right now.
All right.
Dear sir, while I still have got breath in my lungs, I will tell you what a dandy car you make. I have drove Fords exclusively when I could get away with one. For sustained speed and freedom from trouble, the Ford has got every other car skinned. And even if my business hasn't been strictly legal, it don't hurt anything to tell you what a fine car you got in the V8. Yours truly, Clyde Champion Barrow. Over the years, many have questioned the authenticity of Clyde's letter to Henry Ford, based on a discrepancy over handwriting. The letter is currently on display at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan. I don't know if he sounded like that, but I assume that he did.
I think he did.
Well, I mean, there you go. I got some impressions out there trying to be a voice actor. Okay, starving. My resume is online at hauntedgarage.net. Go ahead and visit that, or you can DM me on the Haunted Garage.
I'm willing to voice over anything.
I'll even do your commercial for canned corn. Corn, your body's timeline.
Corn, it's got the juice.
There's nothing like knowing when you ate something, and corn provides that for you.
It's the food that gives you a timeline.
It does. It's the truth. I mean, we could do, look, guys, if you need ads done, please let us know, okay? We're trying to support the show. We're trying to keep going with the show, and we want to do your corn ads or something else. Anyway, Bonnie and Clyde, fascinating story. We've got some crazy ghost stories that actually hang around this car, but first, Jeremy, there are 6 fake cars out there, right?
Yes.
I mean, Ford was mass-producing the Ford Deluxe, especially the ones that he had.
I mean, Ford is the one who came up with the assembly line. Yep. And interchangeable parts.
That's correct, because a lot of people confuse Henry Ford did actually not invent the vehicle. He invented the assembly line that made vehicles produce faster.
Correct.
And the thing that I do want to mention is there's a great film with Woody Harrelson and Kevin Costner on Netflix called The Highwaymen, and it's basically the story of Bonnie and Clyde told from the law enforcement side.
Correct.
And it's an amazing movie. You should check it out. Two of my favorite actors, especially Woody Harrelson, who's just so weird that you gotta love that pickle-eating weirdo. Anyway.
God bless rednecks.
Natural Born Killers. Probably the best actor that we've probably ever had in our lifetime.
He's super underrated.
Totally underrated.
Because people don't talk about him.
No.
He was great as Woody, too.
He's great as Woody, man. He was incredible in True Detective.
And, you know, when you think about Woody, like, he had to step in the coach's shoes, and Coach was awesome.
Yeah, Coach was great, and Coach was very old when he was doing that show. Yeah. So, I mean, it is kind of crazy. But anyway, not to get off on a tangent on Woody Harrelson, we have an exciting show lined up for you here. We're probably going to do the next segment, which is our little 1330, all about the ghost of Bonnie and Clyde. Do they haunt this car still? Is the car you're looking at the right one they haunt? Or is there some type of regression, some type of energy that transfers to a car that would have over 112 bullet holes in it, six times faked?
Right.
So maybe there's some residual contact that people manifest by going to see these things.
I think there's always, you know, putting faith and belief into things can make things happen.
Absolutely. And so whether it's not... whether you've had this experience, hey, if you've seen this car, if you've read the letter in Dearborn, Michigan, go ahead and reach out to us. Our email is askus@hauntedgarage.net. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what you have experienced with any type of haunted transportation, because me and Jeremy actually purchase haunted transportation, and right now we're actually looking for a 1971 Red Plymouth Satellite that is allegedly haunted. We'll talk all about that when we return. Five, four, three, two, one. And we're back just like that, talking foreign deluxe, haunted by two people that were shot to pieces. Ribbons of Swiss cheese everywhere. Brain matter, blood, filling the cars, coming out of the exit wounds everywhere. These two people, I mean, I think Clyde died immediately. Or he was shot in the head, like the first bullet.
The very first shot just was a headshot.
So he never really experienced
the pain of being shot repeatedly.
Which is unfortunate because he killed law enforcement officers. In my opinion, if you kill law enforcement officers, it should be death penalty.
I mean, they dished that out.
Yeah, but we don't. We just, you know, we put them in there. Oh, we let them out the next day after they beat up a law enforcement officer. This is what we do. Yeah,
it's fantastic.
But this type of justice, this is the type of justice I'm talking about.
The old school.
The old school. That's why you put that music down there.
This is God's vengeance.
It is, man. Like, eye for an eye, okay? This is some OT stuff. You know OT? Like Old Testament?
Yep.
That's what I'm talking about, man. Not the overtime, but OT. Not the OJ. Yeah.
Not the OJ.
Which we'll get to the juice.
He's got the juice? Corn.
Back to that corn sponsor. Listen, if you have corn and you're in your neighborhood and you're from Illinois, there's corn everywhere. Come on,
everywhere.
Bear. We'll do a spot for you. All right? We'll do a spot for you, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, so Bonnie and Clyde ghost. There are lots of stories and rumors. When do you know when? So Bienville Parish, Louisiana, the spot where they're actually killed.
Correct.
A lot of trauma there.
Yes.
I've often wondered how the hell they didn't get catch in the crossfire. I guess they were really angled at the right way to not get hit, because 100.
There was like 134 rounds fired. 112 hit the car.
Jesus.
I mean, it's a car. How are you missing?
Yeah.
Like, why are you missing?
Just born straight and shoot, son.
I mean,
this was Texas and Louisiana, so we can actually use those accents.
Texarkana.
Hey, just listen here, honey. Now, when you see that car then come up the road there, go ahead and point that and fire it.
Fire.
Because you don't have like two front. Fire it like that.
Fire.
Steady. Fire. Like that. Now, they're probably a little bit more. I mean, they're FBI. They're probably a little bit more like.
Well, from what I understand, the main guy shot and hit Clyde in the head, and then everybody else just like opened up. You think it was like a old war movie? Ceasefire.
Yeah, because didn't the car just kind of like roll?
Yeah, it like rolled into a ditch.
Yeah. What color was this car?
It was, I think it was called Dove Gray. I have it written down here. Had safety glass. Cordoba Gray.
Nice.
Cordoba to me seems like it should be a Chrysler or like a burgundy shoe polish.
Cordoba.
Yeah. Cordoba.
Would you like to have a Cordoba? Jesus.
Listen, guys, hey, we're having a lot of fun on this episode. Bonnie and Clyde. Taking a little break from the Lemps. A lot of ghosts in the Lemp Mansion, but hey, there's ghosts in the Bineville Parish right now in Louisiana. If you're listening, Louisiana, go ahead, trek out there, stay there the night, be in the ditch, look for a couple ghosts. They're also known as holy people.
They're churchgoers.
Yeah, I have no sympathy for these people. They killed 9 law enforcement officers and 4 civilians for no reason. I mean, now...
And they kidnapped a ton of people.
Yeah.
But the thing about the kidnapping is they would kidnap these people, I guess, to get out of a sticky situation, drive really far away, and then dump them off on the side of the road with money so they could actually get home.
Yeah.
So I guess they really were just using them as a human shield, and thank God they didn't get used.
Yeah, and then Hollywood kind of glorified the film, which was kind of the opening of one of the things in 1967, which was just a weird year for everything paranormal, but also... This idea that Bonnie and Clyde were this romantic couple and everything like that. Guys, they didn't really have a long stand. I mean, they had 24 months, and they were able to track them down and end them. There was no long trial. There was no tax dollars that we had to pay for it.
Just for the bullets.
And I have no problem paying for bullets.
Cheaper than a trial.
I love when they make ghosts for us. Please make and more ghosts.
Now we can... There's apparently, where this happened, there's an old plaque.
Yes.
So... If you're in the right spot, there's going to be a plaque there. Then set up your investigation.
This sounds like something we should do on the man trip.
I mean...
Louisiana?
Yeah.
I mean, when we do New Orleans, this year we're going to do Pigeon Forge because I love pigeons.
I like forges.
Bonnie and Clyde allegedly haunt the Bineville Parish where they were killed... Right there in Louisiana. And people have seen some stuff, right, Jeremy?
Yeah, they report seeing mists, catching weird anomalies and single photos, and just a general, like, strange, like, ominous feeling in the area.
Of course. So there's, like, there's a very heaviness to it.
Yeah, which we've both felt that before. I'm not sensitive at all. And I've walked into places and you feel, like, a heaviness, almost like... You've been swimming in very deep water for a long time, and you can't quite catch your breath because you're that far into the water.
Mm, that's an interesting tactile materialism you just did there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like pressure.
Yeah, it's almost like pressure on your chest.
Okay, so that's kind of the feeling that these people would get if you have this ominous feeling.
Right. Like, I've had that at Limp Mansion before.
Like a heaviness.
Yeah.
It's just bestowed. Like, somebody's almost, like, grabbing you and, like...
Or, like, almost like somebody's sitting on your chest.
That could also be a heart attack because of that chicken.
I mean, the chicken's good.
Chicken's great. Hey, well, if you haven't checked out the Lemp Chicken on Sunday, you know, get your fill of ghost and chicken Sundays at the Lemp Mansion. All you can eat. All right, bring somebody that doesn't eat a lot so you can eat it all.
And, you know...
See how good we are at these ads?
It's not the same thing as cheap, cheap, fun, fun chicken.
It's not.
No. It's totally different chicken.
It's ghostly chicken.
That chicken is the cancer chicken.
Do you know how many ghost chicken are running around the Lemp Mansion right now?
How many ghost chickens are at Chick-fil-A?
They're all holy in Jesus.
They're all.
They're Messiah chicken.
I love their chicken.
The Savior special.
I love Chick-fil-A.
You know what's cool about the Resurrection special? You can just keep filling up your soda.
I ordered water, but this is wine.
Hey, it's all giggles on this show. Hey, listen, Bonnie and Clyde not only haunt the Bineville Parish, but they also allegedly haunt this
car.
The car.
Yeah, and so there's like 6 or 7 fake cars out there. They toured all over the country making money for these people. But there's 2 main ones that are... One is the actual death car, and that's in Whiskey Pete's. It's a casino in Prim, Nevada. And then the East Alcatraz Museum has the car that was used in the movie.
Okay.
So it's not...
So Faye Dunaway, Warren Beatty.
Yeah. So it's not a real murder car. And then the other cars have been like in and out of the newspapers, but everybody pretty much, even I found it on J.D. Power that it said the car in Prim, Nevada is the actual murder car.
And we're going to actually be in the...
I guess that it's not a murder car. it's a justice car.
Exactly.
You know?
It is a justice car.
Because they weren't murdered.
No. And it would be awesome if they still haunted it. Now, the thing that's kind of creepy about the Bonnie and Clyde is that they were so loved by a lot of people because of the whole Robin Hood thing.
Right.
That when they, basically, when the FBI kind of marched this car through the first town, didn't they kind of pull apart and rip things off these dead people?
Yes. Like, they tore their clothes off and kept it.
It's so weird.
Like, I'm not doing that.
No. No. But people that own, I wonder if those garments, when you talk about haunted objects.
I think the shirt is with the car. Clyde Barrow's shirt with the blood wow. and the bullet holes.
Because the DNA would still be in that car, right?
If it never been cleaned, which I think originally it wasn't. I don't know the state of it now.
Jesus. And they made millions of dollars on this car, right? It's alleged that this thing traveled. A lot of people owned it.
Kind of like they did with James Dean's car. They toured it all over the country, like in carnivals and stuff.
Yeah.
Throw a ball at this car.
It's kind of insane. And one of the cars that we'll talk about here in the upcoming episodes is the Jane Mansfield car too, which is also one that's being transported around. If you don't know who Jane Mansfield is, she competed a lot with Marilyn Monroe for Buxom Blondes.
And there's that famous picture of, is it Sophia Loren? Who is it that like side eyes her boobs?
I think it is one of them.
It's somebody like that.
Yeah.
There's that picture that has been recreated several times with modern actresses.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, Bonnie and Clyde. So the car is actually in this casino. Has the casino reported anything?
So many visitors have reported strange anomalies around the car, a heavy feeling. It's a very popular attraction, apparently. I didn't even know Prim, Nevada was a place. I mean, Nevada has one city. I guess two. Reno and Las Vegas. But
so it's Prim, Nevada or Arizona?
Prim, Nevada.
Okay. I thought you said Prim, Arizona.
No, Nevada.
Okay. So it is in Nevada. It's Prim. How far is it from Vegas? Do you know?
I can look it up. Just across the border from California.
Okay.
So I think, isn't Vegas like 4 hours from Los Angeles?
Depends on how you're driving.
Well, out depends there.
Depends on what you're driving, son.
Hopefully you're not a Ford because you're going to burn to death in the desert.
You can have one of them 460 Ram Airs here. Little 572 action.
Man, I want an 8.1 liter Avalanche.
So big. It's a monstrosity of a car. I want to put the 8.1 in a Nova.
I mean, essentially, it's a bored out 454.
Right. You're just doubling that bad boy.
Because I had a friend, Don, that had a 454 bored out and stroked to a 496 and ran it on methanol in a 74 Nova.
Unbelievable. A little car talk there for you. This is the Haunted Garage Network. If you're listening to us here on 94.1 and 101.9, thank you so much. We appreciate the patronage. We appreciate the follows on the Instagrams at the Haunted Garage and visiting our website to buy some really cool hoodie merch.
Hoodie merch.
That's at hauntedgarage.net. You can check out the Corn of the Macabre. We're obsessed with corn on this whole show. Corn of the Macabre basically has some mystery photos. So we'll post some photos here of the actual car for Bonnie and Clyde. We'll post some other photos of the victims in the cars. There actually was a lot of crime scene photography that was actually taken as well, which is kind of cool.
Especially back then.
Yeah, if you're into the macabre, if you're into the morbid curiosity, I mean, this is definitely something that you'd want to get your hands on too. So ghostly encounters with the car. I know that some stories stem from the original owners of the car after they initially died, that there was a presence that sat, and when people sat in the car, there was a feeling. Sometimes people have actually seen figures in the car. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty scary.
And there's also a hotel in Mineral Wells, Texas. It's called the Baker Hotel, and they stayed there for several nights during the crime spree, and they haunt a room called the Brazos Room and the Ballroom. They've seen Bonnie and Clyde there.
Oh, that's cool. So even in death, they're
dancing it up.
And something I think that I want to allude to is another accepted truth that some leftist newspaper was talking about. Well, they didn't really steal a lot of money. Clearly, he never did an inflation calculator.
Yeah, $80 is almost, it's like
2000.
It's like $1,963 in today's money.
Yeah.
So that was their smallest take, was a couple of grand. Yep. And I think I was, what was it, $1,500, yep, comes out to like $36,000.
Yeah.
Something like, it's a smidge over $36,000. That's some change.
That's a lot of money. He could have bought his own Ford.
They said that they never took more than $1,500, but the smallest one they ever had was $80,000.
That's crazy.
$2,000.
Crazy. When we return, more haunted transportation for you. Stay tuned. Stay glued to the haunted garage.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know. Welcome back. Last segment here, Bonnie and Clyde. I mean, that's basically a wrap on Bonnie and Clyde. You've told you where the location of the two vehicles that we know are at. And now what we want to do for this final segment is to go over a very topical case. As you guys might have heard over the last couple of weeks, O.J. Simpson, the Juice, died of cancer. So he suffered, thank God. Other than that, the thing that came across our desk not too long ago, because people are reaching out to us at askus@hauntedgarage.net being like, hey, have you seen this? Don't you think this is weird? Doesn't this fall in line with haunted transportation? And I looked at Jeremy and I said, Jeremy,
I love you.
And
we should check out OJ's Bronco.
Pretty crazy.
In this story, there's a story that I read that OJ actually interacts like with Nicole's ghost. She's tormenting him.
And this is that story right here. That's almost like, I should, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do our favorite. Ready? And that's the story right here. Casey Kasem. If Casey Kasem read about haunted stories.
Oh, yes. I'm in.
Disgraced O.J. Simpson was acquitted of the 1994 murders of his ex-wife Nicole and her friend Ronald Goldman. But he's been haunted and terrorized by her and her ghost ever since. The former football player great Vernon Nelson, author of steamy novel Emotions Stirred, told RadarOnline.com that O.J. shockingly confessed to him, Nicole haunts me from the afterlife. Well, Vernon, here's your request and dedication. I have night terrors from her. She appears at random at night and is always calling me a coward. She's always laughing at me. She won't let me be. She has fun taunting me. While OJ beat the 1994 murder rap at his criminal trial, he was found responsible for Nicole's and Ronald's gruesome stabbing deaths in a civil lawsuit in 1997. Later, during his 2007 trial for the armed robbery of memorabilia dealers, the Juice was overheard talking to an invisible friend during a plane ride with his bail bondsman, Miguel Pereira. He looks over towards the window, and he starts talking with an imaginary person right there. And I hear the name Nicole, recalled Miguel. He tells her, why? And he stares out the window. I say, hey, OJ, keep it down, man. There's people here on the plane. He says, no, 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 stop messing with me. Look at what you have done to me now. And he actually shouting his own reflection, man, from the window. During his trial, he stayed with Miguel, who said, one night I hear a conversation and it feels like he was yelling at someone. He says, it's my past. It's haunting me, man. OJ at 70 was convicted, of course, of that theft auto of his own stuff in the Vegas hotel. He died a couple weeks ago at the tender age of 76 from cancer that he said the Juice is going to beat. He didn't beat the cancer. He was just a cancer his whole life. Crazy story. And I've often wondered if murderers, and this is something that we should actually kind of do a deep dive in. Do the spirits of the people you murdered haunt you? Now, we know that post-traumatic.
That's post-traumatic.
We know post-traumatic stress syndrome have these reoccurring nightmares of the people that they've actually killed.
Right.
So I wonder if it's something like that, or is it something more real?
I hope it was real.
Also, I'm from South Florida, and half my family's Cuban, so I can do the accent if I want, in case you guys are wondering where that accent came from. We actually don't talk like that, like the whole, like, Tony Montana, Al Pacino, who's the worst actor in the entire world of acting. He is the worst actor. I think everybody's like, oh, in what film was he ever good at? He was the same person in every role. Serpico was Scarface. So right. What are you talking about? And he did the worst Cuban accents. Actually, Cubans really didn't have a big hand in the drug cartel stuff. That was more the Colombians. So it was really funny that he was playing this, like, Cuban
drug pusher. Warlord.
Yeah, and it's like that. We don't know Cuban I've ever met ever talks like that. If anything, it's more like broken Spanish.
Spanglish?
Yeah, it's the worst Spanish in the world, too. It's terrible. Like, if people say, hey, Frankie, do you speak Spanish? I'm like, not as good as you do.
Right.
But it's like, hey, bro, pasa a
pastelito, bro.
Guayaba, bro.
Guayaba, bro.
But anyway, so getting back to the juice at hand, here's the juice on the juice. There might have been some interesting things going on with the car from a true crime perspective. And I know this was started as a Bonnie and Clyde episode, but we are kind of wrapped with Bonnie and Clyde. We want to move right into the OJ because it's not a lot here yet. I think there's going to be a lot more.
Hopefully.
Because the car that he actually did the bidding in is still impounded.
Yes. OJ's actual Bronco was found at the scene with blood on the inside, and it's still being held by Los Angeles.
It's unbelievable.
Like the gloves, all that stuff is all being held by Los Angeles. The one that's in the crime museum is actually Al Cowling's. And that is the one that was in the low speed chase.
Do you think Al Callens had knew?
I think, you know, I don't know specifically about him, but even like Robert Kardashian was kind of like, I mean, like disassociated himself with it.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, why would you buy two of the same exact vehicle?
Oh, he did that before this all happened.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Was this premeditated? Did they know? Like, that was a good switcheroo, right?
I think he did it to be like his friend. Because I think him and OJ, didn't they go to USC together?
Yeah. I mean, they've been friends. But the thing that kind of strikes me from the true crime perspective is like...
Why is there two?
I mean, OJ was not a stupid man.
No.
I mean, he did beat a murder rap. But at the same time, the car... They really couldn't get anything from the car.
Right. If you guys watched it like we did as teenagers, it sounds like both the defense and the prosecution were a bunch of morons.
So when they keep saying everything up. Yeah, they keep saying OJ's Bronco, OJ. That's actually not OJ's Bronco.
It is not OJ's Bronco.
So we're debunking this. Not even a Lemp episode and we're debunking this. The major highway scene with the Bronco going, that is not OJ's car.
No, OJ went to Al... held a gun on him and told him to drive. And that's when he, you know, he's got a gun to his head. I'm Al Cowling's GD, you know. So it was that famous Bronco they call OJ's Bronco was Al Cowling's. It was exactly the same model, year, same everything.
And that's what kind of creeps me out, right? Because they go to check this vehicle for things, but Al had nothing to do with it.
Right.
So when they... I guess eventually impound
OJ's Bronco. Yeah, OJ's Bronco had, because Al Cowling, there's like a chain of custody of who has owned it.
Right.
Where OJ's, I searched and searched and searched, and finally I found an article that said all the OJ evidence is still being held by Los Angeles and will never be released.
Except for what Kardashian held in the suitcase.
Right.
That everybody sees on camera.
Right.
This is one of the spookiest parts of that documentary. Have you ever seen that Kardashian, like, and everybody that follows these idiots that have been on TV now, they're celebrating 20 seasons.
They're famous for being hookers.
Right. I am celebrating 20 years of never watching an episode.
Yep. I have never seen an episode. My wife doesn't watch that kind of stuff. Love you, Sarah. Yeah.
Now, Bailey loves trash TV, which is what she calls a trash TV. As long as you're identifying it as trash TV, it gets a pass.
My wife just watches true crime.
Yeah. And 100%. And when you watch this true crime in particular, that creepiest thing is when Kardashian is actually the lawyer, the actual one that went to school and did things with his life, actually had like a life. The reason why all these imbeciles online that are more plastic than they are human now. The thing with him is that he's actually taking this bag, and in this bag has got to be something that's criminal.
I would think so.
And he was not really close to OJ after that. He might have opened that. He got a whiff of that bag and was like, oh boy.
He disassociated cabbage. Himself from OJ.
I smell hot cabbage. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. What's going on in there? Not right. That dead people smell like hot cabbage, but they could.
I usually the dead people I've seen have been embalmed.
Yeah, well, that's true. But anyway, so the thing with this story, and the Bronco, right? So we don't know if the Bronco per se is haunted because it's been with the Los Angeles Police Department since 92 or wherever it was.
94.
94.
I think it happened 94, trial, yeah. 95.
Yeah, so 94, and it's pretty crazy. It's been sitting in, a yard. It's probably rotted. At this point.
I'm sure.
It's a California car.
The paint is probably just destroyed on the roof.
Yeah, but California cars don't rust.
No, they just get that little bit of surface rust.
Yeah, so humidity there. It's actually, if you're looking for a classic car, best place to buy cars, Arizona desert, Nevada, California.
Western Texas,
just awesome because, yeah, they're going to look rusty, but it's just the surface.
You can scrub that up. You can do David Freiberger's Comet Wash.
Exactly. Comet Wash. This episode brought to you by Comet Wash. Nope, not brought by, because no one, yep.
Hey, Comet, would you like to sponsor us for the Comet Wash?
Hey, why not? Corn and Comet Wash.
Corn.
What? Weird episode tonight.
Comet.
Anyway, what else do we have on this Bronco? We have the one in the Alcatraz, Alcatraz Museum, which is Al Collins.
Right.
Collins.
And then the other one is in... It's still in custody of the Los Angeles Police Department.
What is your take on whether or not you have people that kill? Because, you know, sociopathic people, they don't really have emotion.
Right.
I don't know that they would even freak out if they saw, like, a ghost of somebody they killed. They'd probably like, oh, can I kill you again? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's weird that story comes from somebody that is not OJ. Like, he witnessed him having these conversations.
Yeah, I would love to get the bail bondsman, if he's not dead, Miguel, on the show to talk more about that. Because this is the first time I'm hearing it. And that article was from Radar Online. That is not something we wrote. Just want to put that out there. That's actually from Radar Online. And if he's still out there, I doubt he even talks like that. But hey, it's all about embellishment, right? But I wonder if he would be willing to talk more about that. I have never heard this side of it.
No. And I know that the house is still there. The house is still there. It was purchased like 2 years later. I think it was sold again like 2002 for like $1 million. But all the landscaping has been changed to the point where you can't recognize like where it happened. And then they changed the address, which is weird because it was on Bundy. Like Bundy? Like,
yeah.
What?
Another guy used to brutalize women.
Right.
That's insane that it was on Bundy too. I mean, that I don't really believe in coincidence, but that is strange, man.
It really is strange.
Yeah. And the thing too with Brentwood, you know, like I said, my fiance's family lives in L.A., the Brentwood area, and they live in Santa Monica, actually. But Brentwood's right there. So you kind of go through Beverly Hills and all these neighborhoods and stuff like that. So this is not the first time, though, we've heard, to kind of circle back with Lemp, where they changed the address. After Elsa Lemp died at 13 Hortense Place, it did not go by 13 Hortense Place for a very long time. It went by the city block.
Right.
Isn't that crazy? A lot of people don't know that little fun fact. but it was kind of crazy that it had gotten so much attention. Because I believe, and when you see the documentary this year, if you're coming, that people believed something was more to her case. I think so. This was another woman. This was another wife that's brutally murdered, killed.
And she was the one who had the cash.
Right.
Like, she was very affluent.
Yeah. Well, one of the richest ladies to ever walk in St. Louis. So, looking at Nicole Brown Simpson, and poor Ron, I mean, he's just an innocent bystander. He's like, hey, you left your sunglasses.
Well, allegedly, they were kind of like dating or something.
Yeah. I mean, he was very, very good-looking guy. But, yeah, I mean, I think that that whole abusive relationship, the thing that goes by, and the fact that what's been happening the last couple of weeks where all these idiots are coming out talking about, oh, yeah, he was definitely guilty, but it was justice. It was justice for Rodney King and another slang. I'm like, no, murder is murder.
There was no justice.
There's no justice there,
the
man.
The justice for Rodney King would be prosecuting those police officers.
Yeah.
This is OJ. This is a completely different case.
Yeah. And, you know, it's in the documentary, the one that ESPN did, the lady even says he was going free. One of the actual person that was on the jury said he was going free regardless because he was a black man that killed a white woman.
Right.
And that's upsetting to the, I believe, the Perlman family and Goldman family. And
the Brown family?
Yeah.
Like, how is that justice?
Yeah. And I know Nicole Brown's sister was very much in touch with this case for a very long time and never believed anything that came out of OJ's mouth. So I hope he's tormenting for the rest of his eternity. The fact that he was out there, you know, saying that I'll never stop looking for Nicole's killer, right?
Well, now he can rest.
Yeah. He clearly thought it was a caddy, Jeremy.
Yeah, I've heard
that
theory.
All he did was play golf.
I mean, I also heard a theory that it was his son and he covered for him.
So, yeah, we'll touch on that as we wrap the show. There's an interesting tidbit, too, once going back to, because that son is not that's not her son.
Right.
It's from another marriage. And he has disability problems. They also wear the same size shoe.
Right.
Which OJ said he never wore those shoes, and there's a clear picture of him wearing the shoes.
Right.
But it could be, too, that, I mean, OJ was on a plane.
Right.
And it could be that the son just had a lot of malice and torment of seeing his father in so much pain with Nicole that he actually did the murder, and then OJ kind of stepped up and was going to serve the time for his son and try to get acquitted. There is something weird with the son. I'm not going to go away and think that that's resting. Right. That needs more investigation. There's a reason why they're still holding on to everything.
I think so. Well, I mean, technically they...
Because there is a possibility he might not have done it.
Right. There is that. And technically they haven't found the murderer because he was acquitted.
Right.
So I guess they aren't releasing any of that stuff because it is still an open murder investigation.
It's a cold case at this point.
Right.
I mean, this is a long time ago.
You would think that they've dug into the sun by now, though.
They probably have. The thing is that, like, there's a lot of stuff that, I mean, we saw how sloppy the crime scene was.
And how sloppy the police were. And
yeah. And Mark Furman, I think, actually has a show now on Fox, which is kind of weird.
Does he really?
Yeah, he does. He introduces like a bunch of other stuff. It's very strange in my opinion. But you know, I guess everybody needs their day. Maybe one day we'll get a TV show, Jeremy.
I was a crappy cop.
We deserve.
I think we should.
Yes. And so listen, guys, try to get us that TV show. Try to get us some sponsors. We love you. Hope you enjoyed some haunted cars and some crazy tales. We'll be seeing you.
Adios.
Amigo.